Section 3B. Odin had returned home to find Trit waiting for him, but Dua still hadn't returned. Trit did not seem disturbed at that. Or at least, he seemed disturbed, but not at that. His emotions were strong enough so that Odin could sense them clearly, but he let them go without proving. It was Dua's absence that made Odin restless, to the extent that he found himself annoyed at Trit's presence simply because Trit was not Dua. In this he surprised himself. He could not deny to himself that it was Trit who, of the two, was the dearer to him. Ideally, all members of the triad were one, and any member should treat the other two exactly on a par, both with each other and with him, herself. Yet Odin had never met a triad in which this was so, least of all among those who loudly proclaimed their triad to be ideal in this respect. One of the three was always a little left out, and generally knew it, too. It was rarely the emotional, though. They supported each other cross-triad to an extent that rationals and parentals never did. The rational had his teacher, the proverb went, and the parental his children. But the emotional had all the other emotionals. Emotionals compared notes, and if one claimed neglect, or could be made to claim it, she was sent back with a thin patter of instructions to stand firm, to demand. And because melting depended so much on the emotional and her attitude, she was usually pampered by both left and right. But Dua was so non-emotional and emotional. She didn't seem to care that Odin and Trit were so close, and she had no close friendships among the emotionals to make her care. Of course that was it. She was so non-emotional and emotional. Odin loved having her so interested in his work, loved having her so concerned, and so amazingly ready of comprehension. But that was an intellectual love. The deeper feeling went to steady, stupid Trit, who knew his place so well and who could offer so little other than exactly what counted: the security of assured routine. But now Odin felt petulant. He said, "Have you heard from Dua, Trit?" And Trit did not answer directly. He said, "I am busy. I will see you later. I have been doing things." "Where are the children? Have you been gone too? There is a been-gone feel to you." A note of annoyance made itself plain in Trit's voice. "The children are well trained. They know enough to place themselves in community care. Really, Odin, they are not babies." But he did not deny the been-gone aura that he faintly exuded. "I'm sorry. I'm just anxious to see Dua." "You should feel so more often," Trit said. "You always tell me to leave her alone. You look for her." And he went on into the deeper recesses of the home cavern. Odin looked after his rightling with some surprise. At almost any other occasion, he would have followed in an attempt to probe the unusual uneasiness that was making itself quite evident through the ingrained stolidity of a parental. What had Trit done? But he was waiting for Dua, and growing more anxious by the moment, and he let Trit go. Anxiety keened Odin's sensitivity. There was almost a perverse pride among rationals in their relative poverty of perception. Such perception wasn't a thing of the mind. It was most characteristic of emotionals. Odin was a rational of rationals, proud of reasoning rather than feeling. Yet now he flung out the imperfect net of his emotional perception as far as he could, and wished for just a moment that he were an emotional, so that he could send it out farther and better. Yet it eventually served his purpose. He could detect Dua's approach finally, at an unusual distance, for him, and he hastened out to meet her. And because he made her out at such a distance, he was more aware of her rarefaction than he ordinarily was. She was a delicate mist. No more. Trit was right, Odine thought with sudden, sharp concern. Dua must be made to eat and to melt. Her interest in life must be increased. He was so intent on the necessity of this that when she flung herself flowingly toward him and virtually engulfed him, in utter disregard of the fact that they were not in private and might be observed, and said, "Odine, I must know so much," he accepted it as the completion of his own thought and did not even consider it strange. Carefully, he slipped away, trying to adopt a more seemly union without making it seem he was repulsing her. "Come," he said. "I've been waiting for you. Tell me what you want to know. I will explain all I can." They were moving quickly homeward now, with Odine adapting himself eagerly to the characteristic waver of the emotional flow. Dua said, "Tell me about the other universe. Why are they different? How are they different? Tell me all about it." It did not occur to Dua she was asking too much. It did occur to Odine. He felt rich with an astonishing quantity of knowledge and was on the point of asking, "How do you come to know enough about the other universe to grow so curious about it?" He repressed the question. Dua was coming from the direction of the hard caverns. Perhaps Lawston had been talking to her, suspecting that despite everything, Odine would be too proud of his status to help his middling. Not so, thought Odine gravely, and he would not ask. He would just explain. Trit bustled about them when they returned home. "If you two are going to talk, go into Dua's chamber. I will be busy out here. I must see to it that the children are cleaned and exercised. No time for melting now. No melting." Neither Odine nor Dua had any thought of melting, but there was no thought in either mind of disobeying the command. The parental's home was his castle. The rational had his hard caverns below, and the emotional her meeting places above. The parental had only his home. Odine therefore said, "Yes, Trit, we'll be out of your way." And Dua extended a briefly loving part of herself and said, "It's good to see you, right, dear?" Odine wondered if her gesture were part relief over the fact that there would be no pressure to melt. Trit did tend to overdo that a bit, even more than parentals generally. In her chamber, Dua stared at her private feeding place. Ordinarily, she ignored it. It had been Odine's idea. He knew that such things did exist, and, as he explained to Trit, if Dua did not like to swarm with the other emotionals, it was perfectly possible to lead solar energy down into the cavern so that Dua might feed there. Trit had been horrified. It wasn't done. The others would laugh. The triad would be disgraced. Why didn't Dua behave as she should? "Yes, Trit," Odine had said, "but she doesn't behave as she should, so why not accommodate her? Is it so terrible? She will eat privately, gain substance, make us happier, become happier herself, and maybe learn to swarm in the end." Trit allowed it. And even Dua allowed it, after some argument, but insisted that it be a simple design. So there was nothing but the two rods that served as electrodes, powered by solar energy, and with room for Dua in between. Dua rarely used it, but this time she stared at it and said, "Trit has decorated it. Unless you did, Odine." "I? Of course not." A pattern of colored clay designs was at the base of each electrode. "I suppose it's his way of saying he wishes I would use it," Dua said. "And I am hungry. Besides, if I'm eating, Trit wouldn't dream of interrupting us, would he?" No, said Odin gravely. Trit would stop the world if he thought its motion might disturb you while you were eating. Dewar said,
Well, I am hungry.
Odin caught a trace of guilt in her. Guilt over Trit? Over being hungry? Why should Dewar feel guilty about being hungry? Or had she done something that had consumed energy? And was she feeling... He wrenched his mind away from that impatiently. There were times when irrational could be too rational, and chased down the tracks of every thought to the detriment of what was important. Right now, it was important to talk to Dewar. She seated herself between the electrodes, and when she compressed herself to do so, her small size was only too painfully evident. Odin was hungry himself. He could tell because the electrodes seemed brighter than they ordinarily did. And he could taste the food, even at that distance, and the savor was delicious. When one was hungry, one always tasted food more keenly than otherwise and at a greater distance. But he would eat later. Dewar said, Don't just sit silently, Left, dear. Tell me. I want to know. She had adopted, unconsciously, the ovoid character of irrational, as though to make it clearer that she wanted to be accepted as one. Odin said, I can't explain it all. All the science, I mean, because you haven't had the background. I will try to make it simple, and you just listen. Later you tell me what you didn't understand, and I'll try to explain further. You understand, first, that everything is made up of tiny particles called atoms, and that these are made up of still tinier subatomic particles.
Yes, yes, said Dewar.
That's why we can melt. Exactly. Because actually we are mostly empty space. All the particles are far apart, and your particles and mine and Trit's can all melt together because each set fits into the empty spaces around the other set. The reason matter doesn't fly apart altogether is that the tiny particles do manage to cling together across the space that separates them. There are attractive forces holding them together, the strongest being one we call the nuclear force. It holds the chief subatomic particles very tightly together in bunches that are spread widely apart and that are held together by weaker forces. Do you understand that?
Only a little bit, said Dewar.
Well, never mind. We can go back later. Matter can exist in different states. It can be especially spread out, as in emotionals, as in you, Dewar. It can be a little less spread out, as in rationals and in parentals, or still less so, as in rock. It can be very compressed or thick, as in the hard ones. That's why they're hard. They are filled with particles.
You mean there's no empty space in them?
No, that's not quite what I mean, said Odin, puzzled as to how to make matter clearer. They still have a great deal of empty space, but not as much as we do. Particles need a certain amount of empty space, and if all they have is that much, then other particles can't squeeze in. If particles are forced in, there is pain. That's why the hard ones don't like to be touched by us. We soft ones have more space between the particles than are actually needed, so other particles can fit in. Dewar didn't look at all certain about that. Odin hastened onward. In the other universe, the rules are different. The nuclear force isn't as strong as in ours. That means the particles need more room.
Why?
Odin shook his head. Because the particles spread out their waveforms more.
I can't explain better than that. With a weaker nuclear force, the particles need more room, and two pieces of matter can't melt together as easily as they can in our universe. Can we see the other universe?
Oh, no. That isn't possible. We can deduce its nature from its basic laws. The hard ones can do a great many things, though. We can send material across and get material from them. We can study their material, you see. And we can set up the positron pump. You know about that, don't you?
Well, you've told me we get energy out of it. I didn't know there was a different universe involved. What is the other universe like? Do they have stars and worlds the way we do?
That's an excellent question, Dua. Odin was enjoying his role as teacher more intensely than usual, now that he had official encouragement to speak. Earlier, he always had the feeling that there was a kind of sneaking perversion in trying to explain things to an emotional. He said, "We can't see the other universe, but we can calculate what it must be like from its laws. You see, what makes the stars shine is the gradual combination of simple particle combinations into more complicated ones. We call it nuclear fusion. Do they have that in the other universe?"
"Yes, but because the nuclear force is weaker, fusion is much slower. This means that the stars must be much, much bigger in the other universe, otherwise not enough fusion would take place to make them shine. Stars of the other universe that were no bigger than our sun would be cold and dead. On the other hand, if stars in our universe were bigger than they are, the amount of fusion would be so great it would blow them up. That means that in our universe there must be thousands of times as many small stars as there are larger stars in theirs."
"We only have 7, began Dua. Then she said, "I forgot."
Odin smiled indulgently. It was so easy to forget the uncounted stars that could not be seen except by special instruments.
"That's all right.
You don't mind my boring you with all this?"
"You're not boring me," said Dua. "I love it. It even makes food taste so good."
And she wavered between the electrodes with a kind of luxurious tremor. Odin, who had never before heard Dua say anything complimentary about food, was greatly heartened. He said, "Of course our universe doesn't last as long as theirs. Fusion goes so fast that all the particles are combined after a million lifetimes."
"But there are so many other stars."
"Ah, but you see, they're all going at once. The whole universe is dying down. In the other universe, with so many fewer and larger stars, the fusion goes so slowly that the stars last thousands and millions of times as long as ours. It's hard to compare, because it may be that time goes at different rates in the two universes." He added, with some reluctance, "I don't understand that part myself. That's part of the Estwald theory, and I haven't got to that very much so far."
"Did Estwald work out all of this?"
"A great deal of it." Dua said, "It's wonderful that we're getting the food from the other universe, then. I mean, it doesn't matter if our sun dies out, then. We can get all the food we want from the other universe."
"That's right.
But does nothing bad happen?
I have the feeling that something bad happens."
"Well," said Odin, "we transfer matter back and forth to make the positron pump, and that means the universes mix together a little. Our nuclear force gets a tiny bit weaker, so fusion in our sun slows up a little. And the sun cools down a little faster. But just a little.
and we don't need it anymore anyway.
That's not the something bad feeling I have.
If the nuclear force gets a tiny bit weaker, then the atoms take up more room. Is that right? And then what happens to melting?
That gets a tiny bit harder, but it would take many millions of lifetimes before it would get noticeably harder to melt.
Even if someday melting became impossible and soft ones died out, that would happen long, long after we would all have died out for lack of food if we weren't using the other universe.
That's still not the something bad feeling.
Dewa's words were beginning to slur. She wriggled between her electrodes, and to Odin's gratified eyes, she seemed noticeably larger and compacter. It was as though his words, as well as the food, were nourishing her.
Lawston was right.
Education made her more nearly satisfied with life. Odin could sense a kind of sensual joy in Dewa that he had scarcely ever felt before.
She said, "It is so kind of you to explain, Odin. You are a good leftling."
"Do you want me to go on?" asked Odin, flattered and more pleased than he could easily say. "Is there anything else you want to ask?"
"A great deal, Odin, but not now. Not now, Odin. Oh, Odin, do you know what I want to do?"
Odin guessed at once, but was too cautious to say it openly. Dewa's moments of erotic advance were too few to treat with anything but care. He hoped desperately that Trit had not involved himself with the children to the point where they could not take advantage of this. But Trit was in the chamber already. Had he been outside the door, waiting? He did not care. There was no time to think. Dewa had flowed out from between the electrodes, and Odin's senses were filled with her beauty. She was between them now, and through her Trit shimmered, with his outlines flaming in incredible color.
It had never been like this. Never.
Odin held himself back desperately, letting his own substance flow through Dewa and into Trit an atom at a time, holding away from the overpowering penetrance of Dewa with every bit of strength, not giving himself up to the ecstasy, but letting it be wrenched from him, hanging on to his consciousness to the last possible moment, and then blanking out in one final transport so intense as to feel like an explosion echoing and reverberating endlessly within him.
Never in the lifetime of the Triad had the period of melt unconsciousness lasted so long.